Hello, this is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and we welcome you to Love Letters Live. This is all about love letters. This is about personal stories of life lived beautifully, often under, against all odds, landing butter side up. And Teresa and I both feel, we know, that in every one of life's experiences, whether it's something difficult, whether it's something tragic, whether it's something cheerful or goofy or just something you've learned, there are the seeds of a love letter to someone. Someone has made a difference. Someone has touched your life. Someone needs a thank you or an I remember you, I love you, for whatever reasons it is. And we say, write it and stamp it and mail it and make somebody else's life richer. So with that, we are going to go to our guest, Carletta Moniz. And Carletta is a food consultant and a food writer and does some other interesting things around food.
Oh, great.
And I don't know if some of you may know, some of our listeners may know Carletta or know of her, but now you're going to meet her. So Carletta, great. Tell us about you.
Okay. Well, thank you. It's really great to be here today. I am trained as a chef, and a few years ago I became very interested in chocolate and the new chocolatiers and confectioners that were on the scene. And I decided that it was important for people to understand why a bar of chocolate was now perhaps going to cost $7 and $8. And I realized that if they didn't understand the artisanship behind that bar of chocolate, that they would buy it once and not buy it again. So I developed a class that I call The Art of Tasting Chocolate, and I teach that around the Bay Area. One of the places that I teach it, or a version of it, is the Cheese School of San Francisco.
Oh.
But I also have done private parties. I've also done corporate events.
Well, let me just interrupt for 1 minute. There must be a website you'd like to give for people to find you. Is
absolutely.
There, or how do
it's
people...
my it's my name, actually, CarlettaMoniz.com.
Would you spell that, please,
sure.
slowly for everybody?
It's CarlettaMoniz.com. And also, if you Google my name, you'll come up with all sorts of things.
I'm sure.
I have another website called Culinary Muse, and that's kind of my main website. But to find out where I am and what I'm
doing. But is there
a
link from
next,
this to your main website?
Absolutely.
Anyway, so people can just remember this one? Okay.
Absolutely.
And we'll have this on our website, too.
Great.
So that is really interesting, because chocolate has historically forever been something special.
Yes.
How far back can you go and tell us about the history of chocolate a little bit?
Well, what a great question. I think the research that I have been doing lately, I've been focusing mainly, and I'm sort of steering this another way a little bit, but I've been focusing mainly on French chocolatiers. It's very interesting, you know, when Cortez went to South America and Mexico and brought cocoa beans, or cacao beans, as it were, back to Spain, they stayed in Spain for a very long time. And it was through a couple of marriages from the Spanish royal court to the French royal court that cacao chocolate was introduced to France. So for a very long time, it was really about royalty and nobility only, and it was very expensive.
So it was kept in Spain by deliberation, not to let the secret and the treasure out?
Well, that was part of it in Spain, but then it finally came to France, and it pretty much still stayed in the royal court. But then they started to create these sort of tea rooms where ladies could go in the afternoon. It was really one of the only ways that a lady could go out onto the street, a proper lady could go out into the street and go to a coffee, or actually it was a tea house, and have a cup of chocolate. So I love that. And my husband and I took a trip to Paris in the fall, and we attended the Salon du Chocolat in Paris, which was terrific, and I got to meet several of the chocolatiers that I had only read about.
What is the magic of it? Why are we all so hooked in? And by the way, many places you go, one of the questions people societally ask is, are you a chocolate lover? Are you a chocoholic?
Yes. Well, I think that it speaks to people on many levels. The thing that I always tell people is that no matter what happens in a class, whether people are will speak up a lot or not, by the end of the class, everybody is smiling and everybody is laughing. And my premise is because they're high on chocolate, because we've eaten so much.
Oh, you actually eat
right,
it.
We actually eat the chocolate. But also I think it's one of those things that is so connected to childhood memories. And I often, one of the first questions I will ask when I'm doing a chocolate tasting is, what is your earliest chocolate memory?
You going to tell us?
Well, and it's mine, and it's true for a lot of people, at least in the United States. It's the Easter Bunny.
Oh.
And I have a theory about the Easter Bunny,
which is,
and it's interesting because Easter Bunny will come up before Chocolate Santa, will come up before any kind of chocolate confection that has anything to do with the November, December holidays. It'll come up even before Valentine's Day. And my theory about the Easter Bunny is that it's the first time in your life that you are allowed to consume a piece of chocolate in the morning.
Oh.
you've done the Easter egg hunt, you've found the chocolate bunny, and your parents will allow you to bite off the ears, and there you go. So, and I think that is, you know, it's like a duck. The first thing it sees, it believes is its mother.
It follows that imprinting.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I think it's it's the imprinting of the Easter
bunny.
There's
a whole new generation. My children got their first chocolate. They got little chocolate chips related to toilet training.
Oh, really?
And lots of parents are doing that. You get, you know, if you pee in the toilet, you get a chocolate chip.
Oh, I had no idea. Well,
so it's going to be
I see it as a reward. So is that what is happening with your grandchildren now?
Well, I've seen it with kids, and I see it with little kids now. You get a little Nestle's chocolate chip if you pee in the toilet.
That's really funny.
The chocolate speaks. It is somehow its own reward.
It is.
How does that happen?
That's a very good.
It's the language of courtship.
It is. It is the language of courtship.
How did all that happen? I wonder.
You know, I think because it's always. I'm thinking about the way that it evolved in France, and that it was always special.
Is it rare?
Well, not anymore. Right. I mean, there are
good
kinds.
Chocolate is
right. Good chocolate is rare. Right. The other kinds of chocolate are not so rare. But I also think that it may not have been used for toilet training, or potty training, as it were. But it was a childhood reward.
Oh, so it always probably was. If you're good, you get a
exactly. And I think there's that association. Plus, it just tastes delicious.
So, what are the things you look at when you're teaching people how to?
Well, I invite people to use all five senses. The first thing we do is we look at the piece of chocolate, and the way that I set it up usually is that we have five pieces of chocolate so that we can look at all of them and compare. And the first thing we talk about is the color. And that color, color doesn't necessarily correlate to taste. You can have a dark chocolate, a 70% cacao, that has a reddish tone into it that may actually look a little lighter to you than the milk chocolate that you have. So,
and that's a natural thing?
It is a natural thing, absolutely. So we engage first sight, then we engage our sense of touch. I have them pick up a piece and break it in half and actually move it between their thumb and forefinger to, you know, talk about, you know, is it melting easily? Mm-hmm. Does it feel, is it granular? Mm-hmm. Is it really smooth? You know, what is that about? We take the other piece of chocolate and we break it, so we engage our sense of hearing.
Well, you do break it near your ear is what you pantomime.
We do break it near our ear so that we can talk about how chocolate is tempered and what it means to be a well-tempered person.
Yes.
And also a well-tempered piece of chocolate.
Oh, I can picture like a crisp crack being different than kind of a slow tear.
Right.
And that makes a difference in quality or not necessarily?
It makes a difference. It's a good indication that the chocolatier took care when they were producing this bar of chocolate, it's a good indication of that. It also means that it's been stored properly. Oh. It hasn't fallen. You know, the crystals are still aligned
yes,
the way they're supposed to be.
Degenerating.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And then finally, oh, and then we smell the piece of chocolate, and then finally we taste it. And mm-hmm. What I do is I have them, put a small piece on their tongue, close their eyes, and just think about the flavors that come up and what it reminds them of. And not necessarily a situation, but more of something that they may have smelled in the forest. Is it something that you'd smelled at the farmer's market?
So just like wine tasting.
It's very much like wine tasting. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you're going for undercurrents and under...
Right, right. You know, what are the undertones? Mm-hmm. What's the first hit? You know, does it crescendo? Is it a quick crescendo and a quick end? Does it have a long finish, a short finish?
The taste. Like
exactly.
An
exactly.
And who, what kind of people generally, if there is a kind, come to your class? Do you have like a particular group that...
all across the board, although mm-hmm. I will say, you know, we live in such an interesting area. You know, the Bay Area is... well, you know, it's really the epicenter for what is happening in food. And mm-hmm. I know that they will argue this in New York, but when I started doing food consulting, or when I became a food consultant about 15 years ago, it was really interesting because we would be able to project trends. If it happened in San Francisco, it took 5 years before it happened in the middle states.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with New York. But because of the Internet now, you know,
yes.
things are moving much,
yes, split
much
second
faster.
Information. So who comes to
but
you as a...
So really who comes to the classes, I would describe it as kind of your average San Francisco...
Curious about something.
You know, if you're having, you know, if you're in Berkeley and you're at the Berkeley Cheese Board and you look around, people like that will be in my class.
Yeah. Do you want people somehow to know... that as in the world of wine, you can have a perfectly lovely two-buck chuck
right.
and have a nice evening, or you can go for a Chateau Lafite.
Exactly.
And so how do you want that to come across? You talked about a $7 chocolate bar.
Right. The way that I like to approach it is with the bars that I select, I always include one which is always considered the finest, which is... Amade makes, which is an Italian chocolatier, makes a really wonderful chocolate bar that's made out of a bean called a Porcellana bean, which is quite rare. And that has a lovely flavor to it, but it may not speak to someone. And mm-hmm. really what it gets down to at the end of the evening is what is the chocolate that brought you the most pleasure? What is delicious to you? I have to say one of my favorite things is, and maybe because the chocolate that I grew up eating was Ghirardelli chocolate,
mm-hmm.
Having grown up in San Leandro, Ghirardelli chocolate was all over, are the dark chocolate chips from Ghirardelli.
Oh.
There's something about that. I think they're quite divine.
They're wonderful.
They are, don't you think?
Yes.
Yes. I use them in all kinds of cooking. I use them for fudge. I use mm-hmm. them in chocolate chip cookies. I make a double chocolate chip cookie with sea salt on it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a level of acidity in that particular chocolate chip that really appeals to me.
Does it also have to do something with the goal of your eating chocolate? If you're ravenous and you're at the airport and there's a Hershey bar there and you just want, you know...
Oh, yes. Oh, I think
or
so.
Or if it's a very special occasion, it's an anniversary or it's
right.
Valentine's Day or whatever, a
right.
different kind of chocolate would appeal to you.
I think that's exactly right. I think that there are moments where... you need that 3 o'clock burst of energy, and those chocolate chips are perfect for that.
You ladies are so right. Nobody would slap a Hershey bar in your hand for Valentine's Day.
No.
You were going to get even a wink.
No, none of that. But I'll tell you, I still think one of the finest chocolates in the world, or confections in the world, is See's Candy.
Oh, I do too.
I'm telling you, I have eaten chocolates, confections all over the world, and there's some that are really wonderful, but I
agree.
It is really hard to beat See's Candy.
Yes.
I have to say.
I'm like a drunk in a bar in that place.
I know, I am too.
And I have my
favorite.
But, you know,
well,
you have
there
to
we
find,
go.
You
we
have
could
to
do
find,
a whole show
I
on
know,
Steve.
On splitting a box of See's Candy, if you've got to find the nuts and shoes person if you're a cream person.
Right. Oh,
so
yes,
tell
absolutely.
Us some of your memories. I think you... I see you have some things written down. And
oh,
like
well, you know, as I approached this and I was trying to figure out who I would write a love letter to, I tried to think about the people that have had the most influence on my life.
We'll talk about
and,
them. Tell us about
yeah,
them first.
You know, there's the group that I would call my teachers. I always loved my teachers. I loved school. I went to school during a really wonderful time. You know, I was in school, well, kindergarten 61 and through college 78. But, you know, that was really the golden time for schools in California. And I often tell my friends who have children in private schools now that my parents would have had to have put me in a private school now to get the kind of education I got in San Leandro. I mean, there was really nothing like it. There were five languages. So we had a wonderful, wonderful drama program. We had a great music program. We had a jazz lab band that went to Montreux and won as the, you know, best band in the world. So it was that level. So I love my teachers. I loved that group.
We could do a whole program on that, too.
We could do a whole program on teachers, exactly. Of course, my husband. And then, who I adore, can I get you some tea?
No.
but really, my earliest memory and my earliest memory of going out for dinner and just loving a meal was coming to Chinatown with my father. In the early 60s, my parents divorced when I was about 5, and my dad would have me on the weekends, and we would take the bus over. I think it was the F line. You caught it on Bancroft and Estadillo and San Leandro, as we would say, and come to Chinatown, and we would go to the Far East Cafe, which is still there on Grant Street.
Yes, one of our favorites.
Yes, with the booths that had the curtains that went across, and you summon the waiter by pressing the buzzer, and it was terrific. I just loved it. And then I started thinking about the other...
How old were you when you first started doing that with him?
Five. And then my next crepe food memory was being in Bluebirds and being brought over to San Francisco to see the Nutcracker Suite. And the big treat was Blum's in Union Square afterwards for the Hot Fudge Sundae. Can you believe that?
Oh, what about that coffee crumble cake?
Well,
the
you
cake
know...
You were too young for that.
I think too young. Yeah. Now I'm crazy about that cake, and that's our traditional Christmas Eve cake you can still buy it. There's a great bakery in Japantown,
I know. That's the one place, and that's
and that's it. But the Hot Fudge Sundae with a pitcher of hot fudge on the side. And then, of course, all the little girls, all dressed up, would go over to the city of Paris and see the Christmas tree of the city of Paris.
Yeah.
And then when I got a little older, and I can't actually believe our parents let us do this. I would no more let my 13-year-old daughter get on the bus and come to San Francisco with a couple of girlfriends than I would let her fly to the moon.
Right.
But
times were different.
Times were very different. And we would come over, and you'd save your allowance. Mm-hmm. And we would go to Pam Pam's West and have a bowl of steak soup, which my recollection is kind of a creamy, I think there was probably a lot of Worcestershire sauce in it. It was probably ground beef, but my goodness, you could have lunch for like $2.
Yes. But so were you, as a young person and as a child, were you aware of ingredients when you were...
I was. I was very aware of ingredients as a child.
And you knew that you were headed for a life in food, or not necessarily?
No, not necessarily. But I knew that I loved to cook. My grandmother, she lived on East 90th in Oakland, and she had a huge garden. Oh. She had chickens. She had fruit trees. She had, I mean, you name it, she was growing it on that back. I mean, it probably wasn't even a quarter of an acre. So I was always really aware of really good ingredients, but not necessarily a life in food. That happened later on.
As an adult,
right. Right.
So if you were to look at these people in your life, and I will say to you, who gets your love letter right now, and you have to pick one, who would, and by the way, we say that, and what we really feel is it's a love letter is not a one-shot deal.
Mm.
We'd like to see it become really a way of life. And for some people it is. Whenever you have a positive thought or a memory, like to your dad and Chinatown, just make it a note. Drop it. You know, I remember this. I was thinking today about something, and I remembered the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And even to describe a couple of things, stamp it and mail it. And also
that's
to teach
a great
you.
Idea.
But anyway, so today.
Well, actually, in the conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago, I really decided that rather than write my love letter to a person, I really wanted to write a love letter to San Francisco.
Okay.
Because it really is the thing. It is the place. It is the pool. It is my plumb line, as it were. It's what pulled me to be the kind of person that I am.
Okay, so you're telling us this about your feeling about San Francisco,
yes.
But I'm assuming that this is your opening line in your letter to San Francisco.
Oh, yes, okay. Well, this, yes.
So, you know, in writing a really great love letter, all the things that you are thinking, this is why I'll write a love letter, is the love letter.
That is the love letter.
Because you don't want to put that aside and then struggle with, well, what do I want to say?
Exactly.
Because if you listen to yourself, I think most people, you're saying it.
Already.
It's there. So writing a really great love letter, I think, is a matter of evoking what it is you already know, not making something up.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how would you start a letter? Dear?
So I would start it, Dear San Francisco, my earliest memory is sitting in a bus, the AC Transit bus, coming across the Bay Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Barely being able to see over the seat and seeing the Union 76 tower with the time on it.
Oh.
Uh-huh. That's my very first sight of San Francisco. And then rounding the curve before we pulled into the AC Transit bus station and seeing the Folgers sign. It was Hills Brothers. It was a Hills Brothers sign.
You could smell it?
And you could smell it, and it was the ID was a Turkish man in a long golden robe, and he was holding something out. I am guessing it was a cup of coffee, although I would hope it would have been a lantern, but I'm guessing that it was a cup of coffee.
It was a cup of coffee.
It was a cup of coffee. Oh, thank you. But I remember smelling that because MGB was
But is holding a cup of coffee like that as a welcoming
thing? As a welcoming thing.
Essentially,
here you are, you've arrived.
I mean,
yes, the same as
a lantern.
Exactly. It really was about a beacon, a spotlight, follow this. Yes, that's lovely.
And what else in San Francisco? And I'm asking you this because love letters. A love letter is your history documented in your own hand.
Mm.
It's something more than just a love letter.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
for you, who you have a particular place in San Francisco as somebody who teaches. I mean, you have a spot here.
Yes.
So your history, and you have children. You talked about your daughter.
I do. I have two stepchildren, and I have a granddaughter now.
Okay. So wouldn't we want to? I mean, where are you going to mail this? Who are you going to send this to?
I think I would write it up, and I think I would send it to my granddaughter.
Yes.
For her to read when she was older.
Hooray.
Something for her. For her mother to put away.
Yes. Now, you've got, I mean, you're no longer 5 years old.
Right.
You've got a lot of memories.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Would it be nice to do a series of letters?
Oh, that's a wonderful idea.
Instead of one 17-page letter, I mean, who's going to read that? That's a little hard to read, you know?
Right.
And we talk about, in writing a love letter, you have to take into account what the other person can sit still for and absorb.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought, you know, which we would be talking about in a workshop we do.
Right, so it could be a series of letters in terms of...
It could be one every 6 months.
Oh, I see.
Addressed to her. She's what now?
She is 13 months. But this is very interesting because actually the day before she was born, I journal every morning.
Oh, good. So this
would
be easy for you.
And we knew she was going to be a girl and we knew what her name was. Mm-hmm. And I actually started a letter to her.
Good.
Just talking about...
Did you mail it?
I did not know. It's in my computer. It's on my Mac.
Okay. So now maybe you'll be motivated to do this.
I will.
If you go to some lovely stationery store and buy a beautiful box, I think it's always so lovely to start filling the box with actual letters in your handwriting.
Oh, what a wonderful
addressed
idea.
Addressed to her.
Yes.
And not to be opened.
Ah. Until she's a certain age or...
Ready to do it.
Until she's ready to do it.
Even if she wants to do it when she's six and have someone else read it to her.
Right.
But that's
right.
Her treasure box.
Oh, and that's it'll really be, lovely.
As you are part of her history,
mm-hmm.
This is definitely part of her history and something that she will have when she's 90.
Yes. Oh, what a lovely idea.
Well, Janet, do you also... suggest that people, when you're writing to a young child, you say things differently than you would to an older child.
Maybe yes, maybe no. If you're writing it for the young child, to read at a certain age, mm-hmm. you would.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd print
so
that child could have the joy of being adult enough to read the letter.
Right.
But if you're doing something like this, I think either way, you could start them off, like the one you wrote to her when she was...
She was about to be born, and I spent a great deal of time describing what San Francisco was like.
Well, I think it would be nice to do both. It's a wonderful question, Teresa. So do some when she's younger, and then gradually do it more as you would to an adult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you think it would be good to organize it in terms of I think the most obvious to me is neighborhoods, actually, because different neighborhoods in the city evoke
sure.
different.
Oh, any way your
totally
creative self
different.
Would see to do it.
Right.
Because it hardly matters.
Okay. Because yes. I spend a lot of time walking at Crissy Field. I try to go about three times a week. And
the nice thing about love letters
uh-huh.
is you're the boss.
Right. Right.
Anything you say goes.
Uh-huh.
And there's so many ways of doing it. You should do it what's more natural to you.
Yes.
And she
lovely.
Will have something forever. Her children will have something forever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that idea. How
okay,
great.
Good.
The other wonderful thing about writing love letters is it makes you feel so good when you do
yes.
it.
Oh, yes.
You get in touch with your very best self, and you get to put it on paper and
yes.
do something with it and share it.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you
and
know,
bathe in your own positive.
Exactly.
Like chocolate,
yes,
actually.
Exactly. It is. It's not unlike chocolate, ladies. And had I known, I would have brought some today.
Well, maybe you can come back.
Oh, well, there we go.
Carlotta, thank you yes. so much for joining us. We're out of time for now. I just want to thank all of our listeners for being with us, and hope you'll tune in every week at this time.
Yes, and please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, and those are nice too, but just remember that writing a love letter is a special occasion all its own.
So, thanks again.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Until next time, this is Teresa
and Janet
saying bye.